Our speaker this evening is Carol Pope, who has had three relevant experiences, two enlightening experiences, one as a result of personal prayer and searching that I'll let her explain, and then one truly near-death experience.
It is exciting and scary and all that good stuff all at the same time. I'd just like to find out who's here, who's in the room, and just by raise of hands, if you don't mind, if you would raise your hand if you have had a near-death experience.
Awesome.
All right. I'm curious to know if there are some of you who have had a spiritual experience that I have termed them white light experiences, something where it alters you and you get to see something that's very unusual maybe. Raise your hand and let's see how many of those that there are. Yeah, even more. You know what I'm talking about. I thought I would start just a little bit different tonight. And you don't have to do this, but if you'd like to, I think it would be really great. I'd actually like to just join hands and do just a moment of silence. And as we have this moment of silence, I'd like to invite you to offer a prayer in your own faith and in your own way. And let's just bring this Holy Spirit right into the room with us and so that we can have this evening. Okay? And so it is. Thank you. So I want to introduce someone. This is my husband, Dr. Robert Pope.
Thank you very much for being with us.
And I actually just wanted to acknowledge you, first of all, and thank you so much for your support and for being by my side and for being here tonight with me and the tremendous love that you show me. If you have any questions afterwards, Robert is a great resource. If you've had one of these experiences, you know that after the experience, it's really hard to get grounded again. Like there's this real strong draw where you just kind of want to be there instead of here. I know that over the years, having Robert, you know, close to me and involved in my life has been very grounding for me. It has been so incredibly valuable to be able to stay in conversations with him and discuss things with him. I think I mentioned to most of you that I had these experiences close to 11 years ago. I have been silent for many years, not because I didn't treasure the experience, because I absolutely did. It was absolutely sacred. In the early years when I tried to share it, because I didn't have the words and because it was so out of my vocabulary, it sounded pretty ridiculous. And Robert has always been such a good listener. And his listening of me and, you know, just really allowing me to just let the experience kind of be with me, be in me, if that makes sense. I just wanted to play this short introduction. It's really not a poem, I think, more than anything. It's just a talk that Marianne Williamson gave. It's become quite famous because Nelson Mandela quoted Marianne Williamson. Sometimes he gets credit for this particular writing, but it's actually Marianne's. And this was put to music through a friend of ours. Just thought you might enjoy this. We'll start off.
Back in our lives is our fear. And sometimes when you take a very close look, you find out that your fears aren't exactly what you thought they were.
Mm-hmm.
not that we are inadequate. Our deepest fear is that we are powerful beyond measure. It's our light, not our darkness, that most frightens us. We ask ourselves, who am I to be brilliant, gorgeous, talented, fabulous? But actually, who are you not to be? You are a child of God. Your playing small doesn't serve the world. There's nothing enlightened about shrinking so that other people won't feel insecure around you. We are all meant to shine, as children do. We were born to make manifest the glory of God that is within us. It's not just in some of us. It's in all of us. And as we let our own light shine, we subconsciously give other people permission to do the same. As we are liberated from our own fear, our presence automatically liberates others. So it's holy work to move past your own fear. It doesn't just help you. It helps the world.
Just a little bit of a disclaimer so that we can move forward. What I'm about to share with you is not the truth. I know that sounds kind of crazy, doesn't it? But the truth is so big that it would be absolutely insane for me to stand up here and say that I'm going to tell you the truth. There are no words. I cannot tell you what I cannot speak. If there were words, I would have figured it out over the past 10 years. But there are no words. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to point you in the direction of the truth. I'm going to share with you as honestly as I possibly can. I'll be as frank with you as I can. What I'll be sharing is my experience of what occurred as best as I possibly can. What happened in the experience was, prior to this experience, there was a belief system. I believed some things. Then I had the experience, and belief was replaced with knowing. And it's really a strange phenomenon, because when we don't know, we don't know. And sometimes we don't even know that we don't know. So I'm willing to share my experience with you and reveal myself, along with some shortcomings, some weaknesses, and the reason why I'm willing to reveal these things to you is because I would love for you to benefit from my experience. I heard a beautiful story yesterday of a man who was in Haiti at the time that the earthquake happened, and he was running down the street going to get some medical assistance because he was bleeding from some debris that had struck him. And as he ran down the road, he stopped, and there was a little five-year-old girl. She was also bleeding, and she pointed to the rubble. She said that her mother was in the rubble, that she'd been buried. The man took the little girl, and he bandaged her wound. And then what he gave to her was the most beautiful gift that he could have given her, even more so than bandaging her wounds and helping her to stop from bleeding. And that was that he provided comfort for her. He told her that she would see her mother again, and that she was going to be all right, and that her mommy was all right. And the little girl took a big deep breath, and she knew she was okay. When Dr. Moody invited me to share my experience a few months ago, I told him that there were several reasons why I did not want to share this experience publicly. After hearing parts of it, he said, "Do whatever it takes to get your life in order so you can go out and share that message because it needs to be shared." I told him I wasn't sure what I would say or what the message would be or what would be the purpose of sharing it. And he said, "Just open your mouth and say whatever comes out and trust that it's exactly what people want to hear and need to hear." And so that's really what I decided to do. I met him the week before Robert and I went to Europe. We went over to Germany because my husband was speaking at a world conference on health and happiness in the east part of Germany, just north of Berlin. The whole time I was over there, I was just thinking about this possibility, sharing this experience. The reason why I hadn't shared it prior to that is because the experience was incredibly sacred. And when one has an experience that is ineffable, it means there are no words. You can't share it because there are no words to describe it or to really do it justice. And it felt to me that every time I opened my mouth and I tried to share about it, that I got a lot of funny looks. People couldn't get it, especially the way I was saying it. And I think the other thing about an experience like this is that because there are thousands of people who have had near-death experiences, but nobody had my near-death experience, just I did. So sharing it also makes one vulnerable to rejection. And quite honestly, I've had enough rejection in my life. I really didn't want to have any other rejection. I wasn't very eager to share it. And then there's always that daunting question of, well, how did you almost die? And I was going to have to get incredibly honest to answer that and do it publicly. I want you to know that I don't condone or promote or advise any of the behavior that I have done that is pretty unacceptable. And if I had been there, I don't think that I would have believed that I would have done what I did. But you had to be there. And I just pray that, you know, by my sharing this, that there will be a greater faith and charity and hope and joy in your life just from hearing it. That's why I'm sharing it. And that's what's happened to me. I told Dr. Moody that the experience itself was staggering, but what's even more important and far more interesting, in my opinion, is how it was before the experience and how it is after the experience. And I remember as a kid growing up, I was actually raised just up the street here, bound for Utah, went to a school with 95% LDS kids. We had a great time. It's a great school. I went to Newmont High School, Woods Cross, and then Newmont. Graduated in class of 76. You know, I'm very grateful for my parents. They did the best job that they could do in raising me. I was raised by two very, I'm going to call them fanatical Mormons, because they really, really, really loved their religion all the way. And they raised nine kids. My mom and dad had nine kids. I'm the seventh child of nine. They raised us up to, you know, do good and get along and make a contribution, be of service, all of those good things. When I was 3 years old, my parents divorced. My father had been studying with a group of people who converted him to the practice of polygamy. And he had come home one day from one of his study groups and announced to my mom that he was ready to take a second wife. And I was 3 years old, and my mother said, "I'll pack your suitcase, but I don't think I'll be having another woman move in with me." So anyway, they split up. Then my father had 13 more children with his second wife. So I have, there are 22 kids that my dad had. My mom raised us, and she did a great job. She was a school teacher. She taught up in Bountiful School Systems, and she was an English teacher. Very strict, very stern. She used to carry a yardstick, even when she was sitting on the couch. And if we ever misbehaved, she'd give us one of those, you know, kept us in line. So very, very strict. Anyway, so the story that I would like to share with you is, it started 11 years ago. I married an LDS man. We were married in the temple. We had 5 children. And I was, you know, living the dream. And on the outside, it looked like I had a perfect life. We looked happy. We were happy. You know, we had plenty of material things. You know, we just were really well taken care of. My husband's family did the hotel business, and so there was always, you know, enough money to go around. Children went to private schools, and, you know, it looked like it's pretty perfect. I was rather depressed, if you want to know the truth. I was depressed because I was guilty. I'd been raised to be a really good Latter-day Saint and to choose the right and to do good. I felt like I was a failure. I felt like I was a phony. Like I was a real fraud. I was bent on Broadway. My dad always nicknamed me Broadway. I thought I was going to grow up and be a, you know, famous actress and sing on Broadway. So I did a lot of musical theater, a lot of plays, a lot of acting. I sang with the Utah Opera Company and won some very prestigious, you know, vocal awards. And it was never enough. It just was never, ever enough. I just sound like such a spoiled little girl, but it's because I just really didn't get it. I was trying, but I didn't really get it. There was one point in time where I made some decisions, and the result of those decisions was that my husband wasn't too happy about it, and we were in a conversation of divorce. And at that time, I was almost 41, I was 40 years old, and I was in a state of real inquiry. I wanted to know for myself that I was intrinsically worthy. Because that term was a cliche that was thrown around a lot. I heard it, but I didn't get it. And I wanted to get it, but I just didn't know it. I interviewed a lot of people and I asked them, you know, tell me how you know that you're intrinsically valuable. How do you know that you're worthy of God's love? How do you know that? And a lot of answers came back to me, but nothing that satisfied me. And so I hired a woman who did visualization, and she took me to her home, and she taught me how to close my eyes and get in a very restful state, and so that I could receive answers to prayers. This is what she told me she could help me do. And I was really intent. I had been in an inquiry to know my intrinsic worth for some time, and I didn't know it, and I wasn't getting answers, and I felt really unhappy about that. We scheduled a time when we would meet and she would walk me through this visualization exercise. We started doing the exercise. She had me imagine in my mind's eye. Have you all done this before? Close your eyes and imagine that there's a beautiful garden. And if you'd like to do that, you can close your eyes and imagine that there's a beautiful garden. Maybe you can even see it right here. And she wanted me to see the beautiful flowers, the foliage. She wanted me to imagine it on a beautiful, warm day, a clear day. She helped me imagine that there were birds chirping, and she wanted me to hear those, and beautiful, beautiful flowers and plants and shrubbery. Really got it very, very serene in my mind's eye. And she said a lovely stream is flowing down through the garden. So I was visualizing, and all of a sudden, out of nowhere, I heard a voice. And it was an audible voice, and it sounded masculine to me. And it said, today you'll receive the answer to your prayers. I sat up, stopped the visualization, and I sat up and I said, who is that? And the woman said, who's what? And I said, I heard a voice. And she said, have you heard of telepathic communication before? And I said, I've heard of it, but I've never experienced it. And she said, well, that may be what you just experienced. And so I invite you to close your eyes and go back into the experience and see if the voice will talk to you again. So I closed my eyes and laid back down, started again, and sure enough, the voice came back and it said, today you'll receive a visitor, and you'll be able to sit with this visitor and ask them any question that is in your heart. I sat up again. This time I was crying. And I said, I don't think I can do this with you here. And I asked her if she would step out of her own house so that I could have some alone time. And so she was willing to do that. And I laid back down and I closed my eyes, and the thought occurred to me, I'm not worthy. I can't do this. I'm just not in a good space to be able to do this. And immediately the voice said, yes, you are. Just like it read my mind, yes, you are. You're worthy, and today you'll have the answer to your prayer, and you'll know for yourself that you are intrinsically worthy, that you are intrinsically valuable, and no one can take that away from you. So I laid there, and I saw this light in the center of my mind's eye. My eyes were closed, and I saw a white light, and it was coming towards me from the horizon. It was growing lighter and lighter and getting larger and larger as it came towards me. And as it came toward me, I could tell that there was a presence in that light. And it was a warm presence, and it was full of love. I was very moved and a little bit frightened, but I was willing to do whatever it took because I wanted to know for myself. So I just continued to lay there. A very comforting voice came in my mind again and said, I'm with you. And this is a meeting that you have waited your entire life for. I imagined all sorts of things. I wondered for a moment if it was grandmother, grandfather, aunts, uncles, sister, those who had passed already and gone to the other side, that maybe they were coming to give me a message. But then this distinct feeling felt like it was even more than that. And so I continued to lie there and look toward the light, and the light got brighter and brighter and brighter, and pretty soon it stood right over the top of me. And I looked up and I could see its face. And I was so surprised to see that it was my very own face. And she said, you waited your whole life to meet me. You thought that I was someone outside of you. I've always been with you. And then she held me and she loved me and she talked to me. And we communicated for some time. And I asked her every question that I'd ever had. And she lovingly and in the most kind way spoke back to me, told me everything that I needed to know so that I could know for myself. And when it was time for her to go, I knew that it was time. And we embraced one last time and she left. And I got up and I went into the restroom and I was just covered in sweat, tears, snot from here to there. I was a mess. And the girl came out and she said, wow, that was really something. Would you like to come out? And I said, I can't say anything about that. And she says, well, you were in there for some time. And I said, oh, I'm so sorry. I said, was that over an hour? And she said, you were in for 5.5 hours. So she said, why don't you go home and think about that, and we'll talk about it again. If you ever want to, we'll talk about it. I'm available. So I left and I went home and I thought about it and I thought about it and I thought about it. And it was just so different. It was such a surprise. That Christmas, I had several opportunities to sing the solo part in the Messiah. And I noticed that as I sang the words and watched the words in the text of Handel's Messiah, that there were meanings and understanding there that hadn't been there before. And I felt like that, you know, the blind could see and the lame could walk and the deaf could hear again. I mean, that's really what it felt like to me. It was such a sweet and beautiful experience to go through that Christmas season. And I saw the archetypes of Christmas as I never had before. In other words, that every character within the Christmas story is really a part of me, and I'm a part of them. And the story was telling these different facets of our life so that we could know ourselves and to know that Christ within us, which is what I believe that I had met that day. Some very strange things started to happen from that point on. I had been a very strict, religious person. All of a sudden, I just wanted to know. I wanted to know more. I wanted to know more than I was getting fed at church. And so I started to read and delve into many other spiritual practices. in addition to the gospel according to how the LDS interpret it, I started to notice that there were all of these pathways that led to God. There were many pathways. And I started to look very deeply at the gospel, and I could see that at the core, if you boil it down and boil it down and boil it down, that at the core, that it was the same gospel translated in all of these different languages and religions and different ways of seeing it, and that at the core, it was really just this love. And it was that we're one, we're connected, we're all a part of each other. I really can't explain it, but for 7 months, I just went on the most amazing inquiry, experiential journey. It was like I got permission to do things that were not even an option prior to that experience. And again, I'm not condoning any of my behavior, but I just, without guilt, without shame, without any hesitation, experimented with some different things. Crazy, I know you probably can't get this, but 1 week I was teaching Relief Society, and the next week I was smoking dope. It's like just a whole world opened up, and I was this child in a playground. I did some very childish things. Drank alcohol, had my first, three shots of tequila. You know what they say about a person who has three shots of tequila? One tequila, two tequila, three tequila, four. That's what happened to me. I never drank tequila after that. But it was just kind of a weird flip. It just like flipped me. I can't explain it. So the morning before my near-death experience happened, I never, ever, ever would have dreamed that what was about to happen was about to happen. I told my husband, it's kind of like we're on a journey. It's 700 steps to our journey. And the day before I had the near-death experience, I was at 699, but I didn't know it. I just got up, took my shower, got dressed, got the kids ready, shuttled them off to music lessons and hair appointments and those things that I did, And then I got an invitation to attend an event that sounded very interesting to me. And so I, checked it out with my husband. Asked him what he thought about it. Not this one. It was another guy. Told him what I was gonna go do. He said okay. Went to this appointment and I was greeted by one of the most gentle, kind, sweet men. He opened the door, invited me in. He asked me, to sit with him. He asked me what my story was. I said, do you want to know my story? And I started to share with him what I just shared with you about that amazing experience and how it changed me and what a strange path I was on. And I couldn't really explain it because it was so out of sync with how I lived my life. And he started to share back with me and tell me some very interesting things. And suddenly I noticed that he wasn't speaking. He wasn't moving his mouth. But I was hearing him, and we were having a conversation. And I remember thinking to myself, I wonder how long he's been talking to me without moving his lips or mouth. So I questioned, what are you doing? What are you doing here? And he said, we're communicating telepathically. Do you understand that? And I said, yeah, I actually had that experience once before. I asked if I had to continue to speak words, or if he could just read my thoughts. And he said, try me. So I started to think, and we started to communicate telepathically with one another. And it was absolutely remarkable. As we spoke, I looked into this man's eyes, and I knew that I knew him. I knew him in a way that was not common. We started to share some very deep and personal things in this exchange. What happened that night is too sacred to share. It would diminish the experience to share it, to try and put words on it. What I noticed is that in that telepathic communication, things can be shared and spoken and known, but there are no words to speak about. The first experience that I had, that first white light experience, was phenomenal. This one was 10 times more than that. And the next day, as I thought about it,
I felt completely overcome with gratitude. That's all that I could do was just fall to my knees and thank my Father in heaven for that most remarkable experience. And I told him that there was nothing in the world that I wanted to do except for be his disciple. That was all. I wanted every person on the planet to have the opportunity to have an experience like the one I had that night. And in a state of prayer, I said, Father, I would give up all that I have and all that I am if you would receive me and let me be your disciple. And the voice came back. And Father said to me, I hear you, but would you be willing to give up all of the things that you possess? Everything that you own, your cars, boat, your vacation homes, beautiful clothes, furnishings, all those material things, would you really give up all of that? I said, every bit, every penny. Father said, would you be willing to give up your career? Would you be willing to surrender that? Never sing another note, never stand on another stage? And I said, yes, absolutely. He said, would you be willing to give up your family, your mother, your father, your sisters, your brothers? Would you be willing to surrender your children, to leave them and come and follow me? I had to pause on that one for a little bit. The thought of leaving my children was not something I ever thought would be required of me. But I told him, yes, I would. He said, would you be willing to leave your church and your husband to come and follow me? Would you be willing to wear a disguise? Disguise? Absolutely. And Father said, very strange question. He said, would you be willing to give up your reputation and the good opinion of others to be my disciple and serve me all the days of your life? I said, I would do that. And I would even give up my life. And Father said, welcome home. Thou good and faithful daughter, welcome home. I didn't know what that meant. It felt wonderful. I had some friends, some new friends, that I thought I could maybe share what had happened the night before and what just happened in that prayer. And I thought, I'll drive to their home and I'll share it with them. So I got in my car and I started to drive. As I was driving, I got super thirsty. I had a real problem with that. I'm always thirsty. And there was a yoga center that was really close to where I was headed. I knew that because I'd taken some yoga classes there during that 7-month period when I was exploring all sorts of new things. And I knew that they had early morning yoga and that there would be, it would be open and I could go in and get a drink of water. So I stopped and I jumped out of my car and I ran into the door and there was a sign posted and it said, remove your shoes and be very quiet as you enter the upper chamber. I took off my shoes and I got shivers all over my whole body and I started to walk up the staircase. And just as I got to the top of the staircase, there appeared this man at the top of the stairs, and he was dressed in traditional Sikh clothing, and he had a turban and white robes, and I just burst into tears. And he extended his hand and he said, welcome. He invited me to come in, and he told me that he had been invited to give me a blessing for my journey home. And so he asked me to kneel next to an altar, and I looked on the altar, and there were stones and feathers and other symbols of spirituality. And he asked me to kneel and put my arms this way. And then he proceeded to give me a blessing, only he spoke in a language that I'd never heard before. And my husband just reminded me, it's Sanskrit. And as he pronounced the blessing, he kind of brushed, you know, like dusted my arms. It was, he didn't touch me, but he just kind of did something. I don't remember exactly, but he started to speak his beautiful prayer and blessing, it occurred to me that I could understand what he was saying. I could understand every single word that he was saying. And it was the most beautiful, beautiful blessing I'd ever heard in my whole life. It was so beautiful that I just sat there and just knelt there and wept. And when the prayer was all over, when the blessing was over, he put his hands like this and I did too, and we bowed at each other, and then I backed out of the room because it was like I didn't want to break the reverent feeling that was there. I reached over and I filled up my glass of water and I drank it and then I filled it up again and I went down, got my shoes on and went outside in my car. And boy, I was really having trouble getting my head around all of this.
my arms around all of this. I just was so blown away. It was so bizarre that it had happened that way. And I thought to myself, I must have died. I must have died. Remember how they say it's just like moving from one room to another room, and maybe you don't even know you're dead because it just happened? I was pretty sure I must have died. And I was sitting in my car, and I started to pray again. Again, tears of gratitude just flowed out of me as I sat there contemplating what had just happened. And what happened next is absolutely, there's no way to really explain it. I'll just say it the way it went. I felt very strongly that it was my moment. Remember that moment of grace? I'd done a little bit of reading, and I'd heard that sometimes it feels like an insane moment. And it felt completely insane to me. Because what I was believing was that I had just had my own personal meeting with the Savior Jesus Christ. That's what I was thinking. That happened to me. And I just made a pledge to my Father in Heaven that I would give everything to be His disciple. And so I just said a sacramental prayer, and then I reached over in the glove box. This was not premeditated. My husband actually had kidney stones, and he kept pain pills handy. I've never taken pain pills before. But I reached over, and I got that whole prescription bottle. And with that last glass of water, I drank it down, and I drank it down. And I said, I commend my soul to thee, Father. And he said, loud and clear, you're not going to die today, so go get help immediately. And I started up the car, and I started to drive, and he told me the story of Abraham and Isaac. And he told me that what had just occurred was something very similar, and that I showed him my full commitment, the full and true intention of my heart, that I would be his disciple. And I got to my friend's house, and I took the bottle in, and I told her exactly what I had just done. And she asked me what I wanted her to do. I said, well, lay me down, because I'm going to fall down if you don't lay me down. And so she took me over and laid me on a bed. She covered me up with this quilt. And as she put the quilt over me, this warm, warm, warm spirit came over me. And it was like the Holy Ghost and the Comforter being laid over the top of me. And I felt the particles in my body start to tingle and kind of break apart. And I saw this brilliant light, the most brilliant light I'd ever seen in my entire life. It was as if the sun that's in our sky had come down, and it was just right there in my bedroom, in that bedroom. And I started to feel this feeling like I was in one of those, I don't know how that would feel, but you know, on Star Trek when they have that little machine that transports people and breaks up their molecules and everything? It felt like that. I mean, how I would imagine I would be. And then all of a sudden, just like that, I was just right in the center of the sun. And I knew instantly that I was dead. There's absolutely no question. And I knew that my body was still down on that bed, and I knew that they were working on it, and it didn't matter. And the first things that I uttered out of my mouth were, I'm never going back. This is awesome. This is so awesome. I'm done. 41 years was good enough for me. I got to have it all. I got to meet my Savior. There's no way in the world that I could go back and explain this to anybody, so I'm just staying here. Father and mother are there. They scooped me up. They held me. They loved me. They kissed me. They embraced me like a newborn baby. And they told me that I would have a choice, that I would get to choose, as everyone does at the time of their death, whether I would stay or go. Father showed me this beautiful review of my life. When Father spoke to me, he spoke to me as we. He always referred to himself as we. His mother was with him and counsel was with him. It was mother, father, counsel. And they spoke as one. And he said, this is the way that it is. First you get to see a review of your life. And so he started to show me a review. Now, I do have to say something, and that is that in death, there is no time. And so sharing this story is where it gets goofy, because I have to put it in a sequence so that I can share it with you in time, even though it didn't occur in time. There is no time, just only the present moment of now, now, now. In the review of my life, I saw every thought that I'd ever had. I witnessed it again, and I saw that every thought is recorded. And in a big panoramic view, there I am, the whole, you know, hosts of heaven all watching together, watching this review of my life. and I would shrink back and kind of hide my eyes when they would show me telling a lie, plotting a scheme, telling more lies, cheating. You know, you've been there. The hosts of heaven would just laugh. They just laughed about it. It was so incredibly fun because it was like, it was actually a lot like going to my first AA meeting, where everyone who's at an AA meeting is there because of how they got there, right? And that they have a commitment that they're not going to be drinking anymore. So it doesn't matter what you say at an AA meeting, because everybody who's been there has been there and done that. And in death, it's the same way. So, you know, you're watching this view of the most ridiculous things, and great things too. I mean, you know, the great things were great. It was really good to have a few of those. But just to see that it's so okay. Oh my gosh. It is so okay that we come here and we have the experience that we have. Father started to show me why we want to do this, why we want to have this mortal experience, is that we can't comprehend the magnitude, the magnificence, and the greatness of who we really are, unless there's something to contrast it to. Because if you are in the middle of the sun, and you're trying to describe what's there, there's no opposite. Doesn't matter which side of the sun you're on, you're just light. And the intensity of the light there is equal to the intensity of the love. And where it should have been burning me, you know, that intense burning that you would imagine that the sun would give off, that's how much love there was. That level, that intense, intense love. And the whiteness, as piercing white as it was, that was how piercing the love was. Undescribable. Pure love. And then the most amazing thing happened. I'm so grateful for this point of the story, because what happened is everyone there reached out and they touched the person. It actually reminded me a lot in the Avatar movie when they all knelt down and prayed and they would just touch the body of the other one. It was similar. We touched each other, and suddenly I had the experience all of your lifetime and all of your lifetime and all of your lifetime. Each person who was there, I had the experience of, that's my lifetime also. And I could comprehend it because of my own individual life that I had had here. And it was like when that merging started to happen of that oneness and remembering the whole collective experience of all of us, it was like I had believed that I was like a thimble of ocean water being poured back into the ocean, and suddenly recognizing and realizing, I'm the ocean. I am the ocean. I thought I was a thimble of ocean, and I'm the ocean. And it was so incredible. It's so wonderful to realize that there's no separateness. This is an illusion that we have here in this life. We think that we're separate, and we're not. At the core of us, we're exactly the same being. I'm you, and you're me. And we're one with Father, and we're one with Christ, and we're one with all of those other incredible leaders who spoke a different language of the gospel, according to their language. Got it? You got it. Father showed me this plunging planet going millions of miles through the galaxy. And he pointed it out to me and he said, that's Earth. And I chose that one because it's plunging fast enough that it's guaranteed that every person will fall. Guaranteed. Anyone here who hasn't fallen yet? I think we start falling when we're learning how to walk. You know, we're falling down all the time. Then we get balanced. And then we start off in life. I've decided that what organized religion is for me from this experience is that it's like a big womb, and it holds us, and it grows us, and it nourishes us, and it gives us everything we stand in need of to actually survive in the world. And then just like an egg of a bird, once that fetus becomes full term and it's ripe and ready to be hatched, the inside of that egg becomes toxic. And the bird has to absolutely fight for its life to get out. It has to fight, it has to peck, it has to really do everything. And if you help the bird, and you don't let him do it all by itself, it can't survive outside the shell. It dies. Because it develops strength through that fight. And I thought about this, and I thought, you know, it's that law. It's the law that governs, you know, that holds that into place. And then we perturbate, we push up against it, we stretch, we start to ask questions, we start to say, what is truth? What is true? And we ask that because we want to go to the next level. And where once we existed like this, and our whole life consisted of this, suddenly we're out of the shell, you know? Start to spread our wings and fly and do things that couldn't even imagine doing when we're in that fetal state, you know? So I was pretty clear in the death experience that I didn't want to come back. And I think that Father knew that, and so he threw out his bargaining chip, and he told me that he'd give me a preview of the rest of my life. And I thought, wow, that's so interesting. I remembered that scripture of if you could stand innocent and naked before God, then you'd receive the rest of the Lord. And he was telling me that this was the rest of what he had to offer. And so I said I was willing to look at that and to consider all things. And Father said to me, you know, you have to remember that you're coming back right here. This is where you're coming back to. So if you want to go and continue on in the human experience, you could do that, or you can stay here. And he started to show me the preview. And what I will tell you, I want to say brothers and sisters, because I feel that closeness to you, you know? Okay. When I was getting ready to write a book about this the past few weeks, I considered that maybe what I should do is write the book and it would be a Whatever Happened to Sister Nelson? You know, it's kind of a crazy thing to be a pope in Salt Lake City. A female pope in Salt Lake City. You know what they call that, right? An oxymoron. I tell you, I love the Mormons. I love the LDS people. They're just so pure. They're so intent. I love that about them. I look back at my husband, who's a healer. He's a pope. He could want to be healed by the pope. Well, let's do some questions and answers. Well, you know, here's the thing. What's coming is so great that I didn't even get to the end of the preview. And I said, I choose to live! Just like that, I was back in my body, paramedics leaning over me, working on me, and I hear them say, we got her, she's back. And then this intense, intense pain just all over my whole body. Started to question already, oh, did I do the right thing? I shouldn't have come back in all this pain. I really get that pain body that, you know, has been described by Eckhart Tolle. So did you have some questions, Jeff?
Oh, let's see. You indicated that in the first experience that you had, you saw yourself. Kind of different. Can you tell us how she was different than you saw yourself again?
Well, she was magnificent. She was all-knowing. She was totally connected to God. She hadn't forgotten. She was queen-like. She was magnificent, absolutely magnificent, very divine.
What did you learn about yourself from that experience then?
Well, like I said, my belief that I was a child of God flipped, and I knew that I was a child of God. And that being divine in my creation meant that whether I'm a diamond in the rough or I've been etched out, it's intrinsically valuable.
How has that affected your confidence in going about your activities of daily living?
Well, it was...
Or your approach?
Somebody said to me, what happens when you saw the preview and then stuff shows up that you didn't get to see? And what I realized over the past 10 years is that From God's perspective, everything that's happening here is for us, and it's all good. It's all good. It all serves us. It is our highest, most valuable. I mean, the way that it's happening in reality is the way that it's supposed to go. It's the way that God's designed it. And so when my friend said, what do you do when it doesn't go the way you think it's supposed to go? I do deep breathing. Deep breathing and meditation. That's what you do.
Anything in particular you meditate on during that point in time?
My husband and I started wearing earplugs a few years ago because I snore. I don't mind it, but he does.
It's your snoring, I think.
And so we got these really cool Max earplugs. You got to check them out because they're silicone. They're really soft in your ears. And what I noticed is that I can put those in, and then I get very focused just listening to my breath. Just listening to my breath. And it was very interesting because God breathed into me the breath of life. That's how I was revived. He breathed into me the breath of life. I was given artificial respiration. And I've thought a lot about just knowing that with each breath, that it's a breath that God has given me. And it was a gift because I really could have died. It was so close to that. I mean, like, staying there.
Do you believe that we have more than one life? That is, do you believe in reincarnation?
I'm not going to speak for everybody, but the night before my near-death experience, I actually had a remembrance. And I remembered lifetimes and lifetimes of having that particular meeting that happened that night over and over. It was like a never-ending love story. I'm so glad I get to say that right by Valentine's Day. And it was so, so sweet. And I thought, yeah, I'd do this again. I'd definitely do this again.
The next question, can you describe eternity?
Yes, I absolutely can. Eternity is being married to someone that you don't really like.
This one says, I started to study the Bible. This past week we read, the dead know nothing. What do you think of that saying?
The dead know nothing? The dead know nothing.
And some religions believe that when you die, that's it. That maybe there's a resurrection. I know of one that believes in a resurrection, that believe that when you die, you lose consciousness. But it doesn't sound like you would agree with that.
No, the mind is so clear. It's so amazing. You know, people a lot of times, they want to say, did you see this person or this person? You know, did you actually see them? And it's like, in the oneness, there is no separation. It's so hard to comprehend when we have this experience of separateness. But father, mother were like this. You see this symbol? They were one. They were the best of the light, the best of the dark. There was no dark.
So how important is religion?
Well, this for me was a very religious experience. It was incredibly religious. I guess you'd have to ask someone who isn't religious, because it seems to me like it.
Well, that seemed like a religious, not only a spiritual experience, but in some ways.
Well, you know, I was 41 years old. I'd spent my whole life practicing, you know, those belief systems. It's like, who here would be happy to stand up and describe for the group? No, not for this group. Describe for a room full of people who have been blind since birth. I'd like you to describe the sky for them. They've never seen color, and they've never seen the sky. Is there anyone here who would like to take a stab at describing that? That's what it's like to come and share this experience. Those of you who have had the near-death experience, raise your hand again. Is it close? Somebody nod or... Are there some resemblances?
Now, this next question I'm going to qualify a little bit. The question is, did you get information on future events? How near?
What I saw is so exciting. As a matter of fact, if you guys had seen it, this whole room would be standing up 10 times more excited than you are right now. Seriously. That's how you would get up in the morning, ready for your day, 10 times more excited than you've ever lived your life before. Because of what's coming. It is so great. Anybody who's out there in life and they're really doing life, they're playing in life, and they're you know, creating, and just get ready because it is so great. And I didn't see the bad stuff. I mean, like I said, I think from God's perspective, it's all good. So if there's something bad that's going to come, really and truly, you just got to get. It's for you. It's for you. It's good. Yes?
What was that like?
What is
good that's coming?
Well, it was really interesting because when I started to watch it, I was really stunned that Father was so wanting me to have like everything that a young egoic spirit would want. So in other words, I will just admit that I always wanted to be famous. I wanted to star on Broadway. I wanted to have all the money that I needed so that I could do charity and tithing and help people and still have all the toys that I wanted to have. And when Father showed me that that was all coming, I'm like, what? You mean I'm not bad to want those things? You mean it's okay that I really and truly down deep in my heart I would love to have all that stuff? And Father just laughed and laughed. He thought that was so funny. Like he said, just like your mother and your father and your mother, and you know how you love to dote over your kids and give them all the stuff, you know? You know how we do that at Christmas? My goodness, do we go overboard or what? It's because we love to give those things to our kids. We love to give them the video games, and if we can afford it, heck yeah, let's get them a car, let's, you know, get them some new clothes, dress them up nice when they go to church and out in the world. You know what I'm saying? How God is with us. He's so okay with it. At least that was my experience.
Now, that sounds pretty nice.
I'll tell you what, you guys. It's I know this is really bold, but I think I have the Midas touch. I think God gave me that when he sent me back. Robert calls me his lucky charm. You know, the most amazing things happen to me. I think that that's been the most incredible part of having the experience, is that the synchronicities of life are just tighter and tighter and more amazing than one could ever imagine.
Do you have any suggestions for how anyone else might develop that sort of Midas touch? Let me put it this way. Let's say life is not going so well for someone. They're frustrated. What advice might you have from your experience or from what you learned from your Heavenly Father that you could pass on to them that might help them to develop an attitude that would help make life more rewarding?
So the advice that I got actually from my voice teacher was some of the best advice. She said, go ahead and question it. Question the truth. It's big enough that it doesn't matter if you question it. It's true. So it's not going to be altered by you questioning it. Go ahead and question it. Is this really true? And can I really know that it's true? Because what I started to see over the past 10 years is that there are a lot of things that we imagine are true, and they're not true. They're misperceptions. And I think that the reason why we get frustrated and discouraged is because we're seeing a misperception and we're attached to it as if it's the truth. Like what? Well, so what are you suffering over?
Well, like if someone wanted to stop drinking and they can't, is it okay? They should just keep drinking. Is that what you mean? It's all okay? It's all good?
Do you want me to jump in?
Yes. So
part of the benefit I've had over the years of being with Carol's, one of the things I've always been wanting to do or participate in is the integration process. So as someone who's been involved in healing, we understand that there's a process between what we know and what we do and what we say and what we want. And those, the mechanism that holds that in place are typically some kind of belief systems. And what Carol was pointing to is that any belief system is subject to inquiry. And if you're willing to inquire to the truth of what you're believing, then something else can come online. Because no matter what you're believing, there's a version of that belief that's actually kinder and truer than what you're attached to present. It doesn't matter what you're believing, there's a kinder, truer, more accurate perception available. And what Carol's pointing to, if you're willing to inquire around that, then you can begin to understand something that's beyond that. Suffering, when she talks about suffering, I think all suffering is an internal job. And happiness is an internal job. And so the shift in the paradigm comes when one's willing to realize that the source of their suffering isn't out there. It's actually internal belief systems that haven't been investigated and we're still attached to like they're true. And so the ones that I would encourage you to inquire about is anything that causes you suffering or pain. If it doesn't cause you suffering or pain, then let it be until it does. And then when it starts to not work for you anymore, then there's a place to inquire.
How's that?
That's fine. So the question is it okay? It's okay, yes, until it isn't okay for him.
It must not be because it's caused you such depression.
But see, the drinking is a symptom of something deeper. And when that which is deeper gets identified, and the misperception that's causing that, the false perception, the thing that's causing the suffering, gets cleaned up or cleared up, then the drive for drinking alters. It comes from a different place. And then and sometimes you'll just drink until you're done. And that's fine. What happens to all of us, we just do it until we don't. And there's no set time. It's like, you can't put a time frame on it. Because God has its own timing. And our biggest difficulty is we argue with God. We argue with the reality of what is. And that arguing with reality of what is the source of suffering. And I've never won an argument with reality yet. Never.
Okay, here's another question from Carol. Did you see more than just you in the preview? That is world conditions.
You know, there is going to be a joining, a coming together. It may be 2012. I don't know. I didn't get dates and times. I just saw the pictures.
Your future.
Yeah, the future. And it, you know. Say again?
And near future within our lifetime.
Oh, yeah. Definitely. Definitely. This is it. This is really and truly it. There is an ascension taking place. And what it is it's a raising of the vibrational energy that each one of us has. It's when spirit starts to dominate ego. We've got it flipped the other way. And when that flips, it's like the 100th monkey theory. Do you know the 100th monkey theory? Let me tell it to you, okay? So there were a group of scientists who tried to train some monkeys on an island over near Japan. It was a secluded island, and they took 100 monkeys and they taught them how to wash their sweet potato. They trained the monkeys, and when they trained the 100th monkey how to do this, and the monkeys were all doing it on this island, they instantaneously got word that in a neighboring island, the monkeys were washing their sweet potatoes. So in other words, there's an energetic, my husband calls it a morphogenetic field, I know, whatever. But it's the energy field that mind learns from. You know, we learned how to be in the world through that same energy field. And as we start to raise our vibration to higher levels of love and joy and courage and yes, all of those, what happens is consciousness of mankind starts to raise. More and more of us start to experience heaven on earth because it's available right now. And you don't have to wait till you die. You can actually have it right here. And it is a matter of stepping through where you have been unwilling to reveal yourself. Once we reveal ourselves, then we get to learn from the lesson and move to the next level. And what happens is we get stuck holding our secrets like treasures instead of putting light on them and letting them just be what they were, learning experiences.
What's the difference between the difference between the queen-like divine self, Christ within, that you saw in your first experience and the divine father-mother that you met in your near-death experience?
It was the connection that I had with my true self. That was the first experience. It was like meeting the true self. Not this inauthentic, pretentious image of my true self, which is how I identified myself, that's who I was. I got to actually see who I really am. It's not just this body. It's much, much more than a body. Because this body will decay and be placed in the ground at some point in time, but the mind lives on.
If there's something that a person desired, more of a in life, a goal or objective, I mean, you started with the visualization exercise. Can visualizing, or is there some process or something that a person can do to help bring about more of what they would like in life, their goals, etc.?
Yes. What I saw in the near-death experience is that everything that you would want is already here. You just haven't received it yet. And so the visualization process allows you to get really clear of what it is that you're looking for, and then it will manifest, and you can receive it or not. And it's kind of hard to get your arms around that. That is the truth. God said to me, everything that I have is yours. It's already yours. You just haven't received it. And so open your arms to it. Open your mind to it. See it. Visualize it. And then you'll see it actually appear. You'll attract it to you. It's the law of attraction. The law of alignment, where you align with what it is that you say that you really, really want. I think the dilemma that a lot of human beings face is that we're focused on what we don't want. And so we're in a resistance pattern where we're pushing against what we don't want instead of focusing on what we want and opening our arms to receive it.
There was a question about your book. You're in the process of writing the book. You don't have that, but you do have some things there.
Right. So so what I've been doing the past few years is developing myself in business. One of the things that I saw on the other side was that I was a very, very successful businesswoman. At the time, I was a performing artist. And so I thought, I need to go back to school and put the biz in showbiz. So that's what I did. I started training in 2001 and become actually quite successful in business. And some remarkable, you know, opportunities have shown up for me.
You have some things here.
Oh, yeah.
But I wanted to...
So I just wanted to say what I have. First of all,
go ahead.
I'm going to offer to have you come to our office next Tuesday evening if you want to. Free invitation to anyone who wants to come and just do more of this question answer and coaching, because that's what I love to do. I love to coach. We gather together like in a mastermind where we set an intention for the evening. And then I do some guided work, so that if you have, you know, something that you really would like to manifest in your life, you'd love to see happen, then I would be a stand that you could have those things in your life. Right after the experience, as I said, I struggled with words. I had such a hard time talking about it. I felt really embarrassed that that I had, you know, nearly killed myself, and that I'd abused the drugs the way that I did, and I had a lot of work to do, a lot of personal work to do to get that all, you know, managed and taken care of. But I wanted to share the experience, and as I said, I spent many years singing and performing, and a friend of mine who lives in California, who's actually done film producing for Hollywood, was coming to Salt Lake to do a promotional film for a business friend of ours. And he said, hey, while I'm there, why don't we just do some filming, and you could capture on film the essence of your story. We did a recording, my favorite Christmas song, and it's one of my favorite Christmas songs because it's an Easter song as much as a Christmas song, called O Holy Night. And I felt like that song could actually share the message of what happened in that first meeting, that first purple meeting, better than I could actually share it, because I just didn't have the words, but the words in that song were so beautiful. So I did, I made a kind of like a little music video. And it's old, it's, you know, it's dated, and I look at it now and I feel a little bit silly about the whole thing. We filmed part of it up at Temple Square. I got permission, and then I had to ask forgiveness too, because we, you know, filmed it. Then we went to Brighton, and it was just freezing, freezing cold the day that we filmed it. And so I wore this really fancy coat. I was doing at the time lots of auditioning, and I was wearing the real fancy dresses because I was singing with the opera company and things like that. So, and I'm selling those tonight. If you'd like to pick one up, you're certainly welcome to. $10 for a DVD or the CD is just $5. And if you are interested in the book, I'm about halfway through with writing it. I'm working as fast as I can on it. It's a little more complicated than I thought it was going to be when I started writing it. Organization, I think, is the biggest. If you want to get the book, I'm selling them for $25 a piece. But just tonight, if you want to buy one, because I haven't written it yet. I'll give you a receipt for two, for the present one.
During your NDE, were you able to learn and understand things about the universe more of them? Were you told why some people become like murderers or dictators like Hitler, etc.? Or were you, did you learn anything about the nature of evil?
Yeah, what I saw is that every person chooses a plan that is perfect for them. It's something that they're willing to do, and they are best suited for that particular plan better than anybody else. Like, nobody can do your plan like you. Because we are having an experience and then sharing that experience in depth with one another, we're having shared experiences. What I noticed was that I had this intense gratitude for the people who had taken the dark path. I was so grateful for them because the contrast of the light and the darkness is where the greatest comprehension takes place of who we really are. Since we comprehend everything through an opposite thereof, it's like the darker that these people went, the brighter the light was. And so I felt this tremendous gratitude for the people who were willing to come here and do those things. It sounds really crazy, but I saw that they were forgiven, that God understood it, that it was part of the plan so that we could comprehend and know ourselves in the hereafter.
It seems that in the experience of the Sikh mind, we're experiencing a spiritual experience in a physical environment. I don't know how better to put it, but was there any such there after in the yoga class after, or what did you think of him? And secondly, what was it there in your mind and heart when you suddenly decided to take the pills? Most people who are trying to commit suicide, in my experience, are despondent and despairing. And it seems, on the other hand, that you were on a high. So what was in your heart and mind?
The answer to the first question, I didn't know if the Sikh was an angel or if he was a real person. I didn't know that. And then later on, I was at a party with my husband, and I said to him, that guy over there looks an awful lot like the Sikh who gave me that blessing. My husband knew him. He is actually a former patient of my husband, and he went over and we had a little conversation with him and asked him if he was the fellow who had given me that blessing. And he said it was him. So he was a real person. In the hospital, however, after the experience, I was taken to the hospital for full analysis and, you know, all of that. They pumped my stomach and put the charcoal and all that stuff in there so that to make sure that I didn't get toxic from the drugs that I had taken. I actually had a visitor come and stay with me. He told me that he was a doctor, and he introduced himself. He was dressed in doctor's clothes. When he was standing by the door, I had the thought to myself, he reminds me a little bit of my brother, who reminded me a little bit of Santa Claus. Because, you know, white beard, he had a cane. The doctor actually said, a lot of people, he just said out loud, a lot of people think I look like Santa Claus. And I realized that he had heard my thoughts, just as had happened earlier. And then the next day, when the doctors were going to release me and they were giving me an explanation of the studies that they had found while I was in the hospital, there was a little bit of a delay because one of the tests that I had taken, the computer had broken down and they weren't able to get the conclusion of that for several minutes. We were waiting and waiting and waiting. And I told them that I already knew what the test meant, because the doctor from the night before had shared the whole thing with me. And when they asked me what he had shared with me, I told them what he had explained is that a lot of times when people like me live a very strict life, they're like a pendulum that never gets to go like this. It just goes like this. And so he said that sometimes when people have life-changing experiences like that, what it does is it releases the pendulum. And so where it used to just kind of go like this, it starts going, whoa, whoa. And I said, that does make a lot of sense. I think that's what happened to me. And so it kind of explained the erratic behavior that had happened right after that first white light experience.
What have you done to stay in contact?
I was just inquiring, in the past 10 years, have you been able to maintain contact with the other side, so to speak?
I don't notice the telepathic, clear voices coming to my mind, and I'm okay with that. And I definitely feel a direct link with Father and Mother. I have committed my time, a lot of my time, to prayer and meditation. I do a little bit different kind of meditation. I definitely stay connected, and I see it because of the synchronicities that happen. It's really uncanny to me. I'll sometimes be, I'm sure this is similar to many of you, but have you ever been in the car and you're thinking a thought, you're thinking about something, and then the words to a song will come on the radio right then, and it's exactly what you're thinking about. You know what I'm talking about, yeah. And the other thing is that I'll sometimes pray to know something or to understand something or to get my arms around something. Someone just shows up. The most beautiful meetings of people just coming up, you know, sharing something, exactly what I needed to hear, and vice versa. It seems like there's this beautiful divine exchange that's happening because on a spiritual level, there's such a connection. There's just a deep connection.
This is probably not fair, but if you can give a real fast physical synopsis of how you manifested the change, you obviously have a new husband, whole new outlook, new lifestyle, whatever. What steps did you go through from being Sister Nelson, as it were?
You know,
to whoever you are now.
What I noticed is that everything that I had told Father that I was willing to give up was required of me, temporarily. You know, there was a lot of upset. My children were really, really upset with me. My mother was very upset. My siblings disowned me. You know, they could not imagine the way I would hurt the family name that way and do the crazy things that I'd done and then be honest about it on top of it. I mean, that just was, you don't do those things and then just lay it out on the table and say, this is what I did, you know, but that's what I did. So what I call it is, like, it really felt to me like an undoing. Soon after I had the experience, I was introduced to Byron Katie. And if you haven't explored the work of Byron Katie, then get on the internet and look up thework.com or thework.org and learn that inquiry process. And to me, that was very grounding. And as I listened to Katie share, it was like, oh, yes, I get it. I totally get it. She had a very similar experience to mine, I believe, and I'm not sure. I haven't ever asked her in the detail that I shared with you tonight. Byron Katie, she was named after an uncle. So her first name is Byron, but her middle name is Katie. And it's called thework.com, thework.org. And she's got a beautiful website where you can get on and print out worksheets and learn how to do that inquiry process and know for yourself. It's a beautiful way to start getting to the core of truth instead of death. I just want to add that I have absolutely no desire to convert anybody to anything. I think where you are, your path is perfect. And I think your beliefs and, you know, your thoughts are absolutely what they should be. And so if it doesn't resonate, the things that I shared with you, it's okay. Because I don't need you to believe me. It was just my experience.
Very good. Liz, thanks, Carol. Thank you, Carol. And if you'd like to come and chat with her for just a minute.